Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
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 Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast where three random guys, none of whom are named Bob, talk about science fiction, fantasy, and other types of books.
What about
specifically
Roberts?
Audiobooks?
Aren't those really Bob's?
The Roberts rules.
Yes. Speaking of which, order. Let's see. So this week we are discussing We Are Legion, We Are Bob by Dennis Taylor. From the back of the book, Bob Johansson has just sold his software company and is looking forward to a life of leisure. There are places to go, books to read, and movies to watch. So it's a little unfair when he gets himself killed crossing the street. Bob wakes up a century later to find that corpsicles have been declared to be without rights, and he is now the property of the state. He has been uploaded into computer hardware and is slated to be the controlling AI in an interstellar probe looking for habitable planets. The stakes are high, no less than the first claim to entire worlds. If he declines the honor, he'll be switched off and they'll try again with someone else. If he accepts, he becomes a prime target. There are at least three other countries trying to get their own probes launched first, and they play dirty. The safest place for Bob is in space, heading away from Earth at top speed. Or so he thinks, because the universe is full of nasties, and trespassers make them mad. Very mad. All right, so what did everybody think? Barry?
I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it a lot. I felt that it channeled, you know, basically all of, you know, some aspect of all of us in this book.
Yeah, definitely.
Between Bob's dislike of people, me. Dislike of people, you, Stephen, and the absolute, like, sheer crazy terror, Kevin.
All right. Did you have anything else to say?
I have other thoughts.
Would you want to share them with us now or later?
Oh, you meant about the book?
Kevin!
It was favorable.
Great.
I enjoyed it quite a bit, you know. Halfway through the book, you're like, God, just hurry up and make this happen to me already. Eventually.
This book made me want to die, raved Kevin.
Yeah, you could put that part off towards later, but, you know, the eventual part.
I would like to reduce Kevin to an AMI.
I mean, the weirdest thing is
not an Amazon machine instance, but.
The weirdest thing is I know someone that the first part happened to. I'm hoping the second part does happen to him also.
Okay.
For reals.
Okay.
I had no idea. Is my head frozen someplace?
Right there, actually.
Well,
this is actually just a
let's check the Ubix system.
Exactly. Nice one. All right. Yeah, I absolutely loved this. You guys at one point sent me a text saying, this is Steven's wet dream. Now, wet dream, no, but it's sort of weird when somebody takes something you've sort of randomly daydreamed about and writes it in novel form. It's a book by an engineer for engineers, I believe.
Right.
About what if an engineer got to play with all the really cool stuff.
I mean, it's definite wish fulfillment. And, you know, the only thing bad I can really say is that, you know, since that's my job, you know, it's not like, this is a really difficult to understand book with a lot of, you know, there are social implications definitely in the book, but it's like, you know, it's fun, you know, 99% of the time.
Right.
It's not like you're like, what's going on in here or anything like that. It's just like, this is awesome. This is even more awesome.
Yes. Like, it's a wish fulfillment book and it's my wishes being fulfilled. So I'm in.
it's a trillionaire project.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, how come? Hurry up and do this already. Bob me.
Bob me.
Well, eventually.
Well, first we need the, what was it? The faith, you know,
well,
religious military group to take over the planet.
Well, that was just and along the way. The other countries were doing it as well.
Okay. Well, I think the lifetime of the review section is at an end, so it's time to create more analytical clones of ourselves to head to the distant star we call the discussion section. We shall return, for we are sci-fi.
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 And not Bob. And welcome back to our discussion section. So I guess we could start with, did people have favorite scenes?
You did.
Well, that's good.
The problem is the whole book was my favorite scene, so it's sort of hard to pick out the best part. I think one of my favorite general parts was that it felt like you're playing Masters of Orion or something. And so...
Isn't that Masters of Orion?
That's not what I said.
You said Matches of Orion.
Matches of Orion. Didn't the first Bachelor come out?
gives me a whole new frame of mind.
Is what I'm thinking. Masters of Orion 2, but basically one of those, you know, 4X space type games where you're upgrading your ship all the time. So when they kind of run into that problem of you know, what is it? The evil ship. I can't remember the name, but basically the ships that were attacking them. And so he's like, well, we need to upgrade, our ships.
Well, Major Ernesto Medeiros is the guy.
Medeiros. Named after that wine or something. Anyway.
Have some Medeiros, my dear.
So they're like, oh, well, we just need bigger ships with bigger drives and, you know, faster reaction times and stuff like that and more memory. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. And, you know, so it kind of felt like you're designing your next ship to upgrade yourself. And that was kind of cool, too.
A little bit like my favorite line in Godzilla versus Megalon, where the robot Gieto Jagar programs himself to be more intelligent and much larger.
I guess you can do that if you do it this way.
Exactly. If you've got a 3D printer, nothing's impossible.
Well, just print up myself a new body and move into it.
That would definitely do it. So yes, my favorite, because it was something that, I had thought of while thinking about similar scenarios was Bob is getting a bunch of transmissions from Earth, but he knows that there's some kind of trap door in his own programming. So he creates a sandbox version of himself that gets all of the transmissions. The thing that I wasn't clear on is that a sentient Bob that he's created inside the sandbox?
I assume maybe it's the same code base. So
I think it's a programmatic Bob.
Well, so isn't he?
He just steps through it, so it's not super conscious, I guess.
Yeah.
You just snip off that little sentience part and kind of neuter Bob a little bit.
I think you just put a tag on it that says not sentient.
Flip that bit.
Exactly. But yeah, he talks about how basically he had to sort of kill this sandbox version of himself a bunch of times until he figured out what it was that was causing the problem and then isolated that problem and removed it so that later on somebody tries the super secret code.
Execute to, order 66.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just like, no, fuck you.
Not going to work.
Not going to work.
He says it again. Still not going to work. Like, damn it. It's like if I specify the same flag option several times, it's actually going to work, right?
-V, -V, -V.
Maybe I misspelled it or something. Is it uppercase?
Are you saying the wrong V?
Oh, no, it's -V. That's why.
Is this a long options application?
Absolutely.
-V.
Okay. Any other favorite scenes?
I did like the section where they mentioned the quantum effects thing, where there are a lot of books where, you know, regarding future computers, where they're just like, oh, it's a quantum computer. So it's like hand waving magic in the
magic.
Future. Yeah. And so this book, I was very pleased when they said, well, quantum effects is basically just hand waving. Yeah. He's like, we don't know what the hell that means or what it's even happening. So
why is this lampshade here?
So I don't know if I had a favorite scene, but about the first third of the book, there's an awful lot of pop culture references that I really liked, you know, just in terms of naming the different Bobs and the fact that he names his assistant Admiral Akbar and makes him look like Admiral Akbar. And I
Oh, but as far as I remember, he never says it's a trap.
He does not say it's a trap.
I'm pretty sure he's got to be saving that. There's no way that we're going to get through the entire series without Guppy saying it's a trap.
Right. I mean, the ball is literally sitting there on the tee hasn't hit it yet. And I'm just waiting, just waiting for him to, you know, smash it.
Okay. So running through the usual questions, was there tea? Absolutely none. In fact, the letters T-E-A do not appear in the book.
Well, I'm sure they do in part of another word, but yes.
No, the letter E does not appear.
The word teat doesn't appear in the book.
They don't appear in that sequence
as a separate word. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's harder for a computer to drink tea anyway.
Mm-hmm. But when I'm uploaded, I will manage it.
I will force my digital cat Spike to drink tea.
Yeah. I will say that.
Yes. There is a digital cat named Spike. There is no such thing as a digital cat Spike, as I was trying to imagine just a moment ago.
That sounds cool. Whatever it would be.
Okay, so let's see. Now for the really easy question. What character would you want to be, and or who would you be? Bob. 3, 2, 1.
Bob. But which Bob?
There are so many Bobs to be.
It's hard to choose, but...
Well, I really liked original Bob because I'm pretty sure I was at that panel that he was describing in the beginning.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a convenience there. It's like, oh, of course I know what a von Neumann probe is. Like,
it's a very lampshaded way of saying, now tell me, professor, that. Well, I went to a science fiction convention and attended panels on all the subjects covered in this science fiction novel.
I mean, I kind of wonder, are any of these, the things that he mentioned, are those real papers or is it just, you know, specifically? I don't know.
I didn't look any of them up because I didn't recognize any of the names, and I assume that I would know the names if they were there.
They might be amalgams or just other ideas people had, who knows, but...
Yes, at one point I actually thought that one of the names that he had was an anagram for somebody that I knew, but I actually tried scrambling the letters and it didn't work.
Bob rearranged as Bob?
Well, it's Ob, actually. O-B-B.
Not Bo with a double B.
All right. Okay.
So one of the other interesting things is because we listened to the audio version of this, you actually got like an extra helping of humor with some of the Bob voices.
Right. Yeah. You actually heard Admiral Akbar and and Homer-ish.
Yeah. I like the Homer voice.
Exactly. The reader did a very good job of keeping them distinct. And that was quite a task because this is an entire book populated mostly by copies of the same guy over and over again with slightly different characteristics.
They're like different code branches.
Right. Eigen brothers.
Quantum effects, you know.
All right. So my favorite voice was Homer.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide which one I would be. I guess the original one's an easy one. The other one might be I can't remember if it was Bill, the guy who decides to stay behind and he kind of comes up with all the cool tech. Mm-hmm. Over the years, and
I chose Bill as well. I mean, it was kind of maybe a close second was Riker.
Yeah,
just Riker, because I'd have like sort of the ability to basically end humanity. But,
do what I say.
Take out Colonel Butterworth, which I thought was pretty hilarious.
So does anyone forget Butterworth?
Yeah, he kept on lampshading things over and over again, like the fact that this was a civilization uniquely bad at acronyms. So, you know, they had the entire land of faith was the place that he was from.
Right.
And
there's also the rebel group later on, the like Vehement.
Right. Exactly. And so he kept on just saying humans are really bad at acronyms.
I mean, even a lot of the other names are just pretty funny, right? I mean, they're all kind of, you know, lampooning a bit of, pop culture products like Colonel Butterworth, right? You have the Butterworth, you know, maple syrup product. And
exactly.
You know, even, what is it, Henry Roberts, the Emperor Hmong of the Jalapeno Empire. I almost had, like, to pull the car over at that point and start, you know, keep myself from laughing myself off the street.
Yeah, I thought that must be a reference to something other than Flash Gordon, I guess, but...
It reminded me a lot of when Rimmer goes insane in Red Dwarf. Yeah. And what was it? He said that, you know, he wanted to let them out of this room, but the king of the potato people wouldn't let him.
Yes. Yeah, that was an awesome episode.
Let's see. And there was at that point, Bob refers himself as the ambassador from, I think, the Bobbian Empire.
Like, oh, okay.
All right. Let's see. So one of the things that I sort of felt this was kind of a smarter Star Trek. I mean, there's definitely a lot of Star Trek nods in this. I mean, you can't say that there's...
You mean like Riker?
Yeah. Like he called himself Commander Riker of the USS Enterprise. Cory Doctorow had this essay once where he said, you know, why would you have, you know, you have transporters, which are, and you have transporters and you have matter replicators. Why wouldn't you just, you know, upload a person every time you wanted to go explore a strange planet? You just send out a spaceship about the size of a beer keg and then just have it beam down, as in materialize, you know, five versions of Kirk and have them investigate the planet.
You've done software, right? So you think the API is going to be compatible?
Look, this is a JSON REST API, and that's clearly an XML.
Right, exactly. That one's YAML, and they say they're the same, but they're not.
That's a SOAP API, sir. It's even worse.
It's simple. It's object. It's access. It's protocol. Actually, it's none of those, but it's SOAP. Anyway.
No one wants to use it.
Yeah, software engineers don't use SOAP very often.
I used it once. It was an error.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, this is definitely, you know, as an engineer, you're generally restrained by time and engineering ability and resources. And this is sort of like engineer in God mode, because you have an entire solar system's worth of resources to play with.
Right. It's like, hey, sure, we could, you know, clone off some of these little things, go off and mine. Then in a while we'll get these, you know, the resources and we'll make whatever we want.
Right.
Well, I mean, that was the thing, though, is that this book really wasn't infinite resources. It was actually a resource constraint problem when he was trying to save humanity.
Right.
Right. I mean, they're, you know, people have a shelf life, essentially.
Exactly.
What was left of the Earth has a shelf life.
Well, that's the interesting thing. Much as a daydream might be fun about, you know, just, and then you keep exploring. Yay! You have to write a novel.
Right.
And that means you have to introduce constraints on things. And this was actually why I kept on having trouble turning my ideas into a story. And he actually was smart enough to say, oh, well, what if we wanted to actually save humanity? Which never struck me as a terribly impressive idea, but
yeah, after he basically, you know, protected himself by removing all the back doors to his programming, I'm not sure why he went back to save humanity, but considering how much he dislikes people.
They did say only a couple of them wanted to.
Right.
I think that, you know, humans, you know, normal people might think that this was a good idea.
Are you saying something?
No.
I see your lips moving, but
it's just a buzzing sound.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. So, one of the things he did was he introduced sort of enemy ships that had these same characteristics and did some pretty good space battle sequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Medeiros, you know, ships were pretty awesome.
Until
they got blown up.
And then, of course, he has to save humanity, and just to sort of up the ante, he has them sort of, you know, obviously manipulate him by, hey, here are your descendants. And he's just like, yes, this is obviously manipulation, and damn it, it works. So he has to, I mean, some of the most excruciating parts are having Will Riker have to deal with a bunch of fractious people. And
he just basically ends the meeting and hangs up, you know, the WebEx. He's like, click, we're gonna meet later when you all can figure out how to speak in turn.
Exactly. And then at one point, I got a little confused at one point, because it says, oh, Homer had had this idea about, you know, if you pitched it, an idea about sort of ordering the ships, you could, you know, how to save this one batch. And he said, oh, well, he wouldn't listen to me, but he would listen to Colonel Butterworth. And, you know, he smiled and he placed a call. And for a while, I just assumed that this was Homer doing a Colonel Butterworth impression for the rest of the book, that he had somehow, you know, tapped into it. No, I mean, once you got past a certain point, it's just like, okay, something weird is going on. No, he just called Butterworth and just explained the idea to him. I was expecting something far more devious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, like, you know, read too much into that, but I actually think that Homer as a Bob and Homer as in Homer Simpson, you know, are a bit more socially aware than people give them credit for, right? You know, because, you know, if Homer Simpson was a real person, right, he probably would have been smothered at birth. But, you know, he's learned to, you know, figure people out and get things done in some you know, Homer Simpson-esque way.
Homer the Bob, not Homer Simpson, the Simpson character.
Both.
Okay, so you're...
I mean, I'm saying that, that this Homer in as a Bob is probably more socially aware than the other Bobs.
Ah, I see.
Right, and much like Homer Simpson is more socially aware than people would give him credit for in the Simpsons TV show.
Okay, I'm with you on the first one, and I'm going to...
Just nod your head.
Just nod my head and move on the second one.
Steven is currently nodding his head, but then he stopped. Now he's just looking around like a crazy man.
Yeah, well, that's normal. Okay, so then Bob also explores brave new worlds and strange new things,
and
whatever.
Becomes an anthropologist.
Becomes an anthropologist. Well, a deltanthropologist, something like that. Deltanthropologist.
It has an interesting way of saying, what is it? We would say Archimedes, but
yeah, and then
Archimedes.
Yeah, there was Archimedes was the way that the reader of the book said it, and I'm not entirely sure that he's completely wrong because I mean nobody
it is ancient Greek,
Greek anymore.
Yeah, I've never heard it pronounced that way, but then again, I'm like, well, maybe that's an accepted pronunciation if you know ancient Greek. So who knows?
Exactly. So
well, I went back in time and met Socrates.
Socrates was right.
You and your friend Ted,
Bob.
Dude,
we are
be
all Bob.
Excellent to each other.
Yes,
we
so
are wild stallions from San Dimas.
And
well,
this is
it.
The Bill and Ted podcast. All right, so yeah, Bob also goes and explores Delta Eridani, where he finds intelligent non-human life.
I mean, wouldn't it be surprising if he did find human life out there?
One of the I think cheat codes that Dennis Taylor put in there was the, you know, he basically had also attended a lecture that was talking about, oh, probably life is going to be pretty similar on all these different planets because of reasons and stuff.
Right.
And so
much that, like in Star Trek, the only thing that differentiates us from beings on other planets is basically some sort of forehead prosthesis or skin
exactly.
color.
Yeah.
Those are the only variables in DNA.
I mean, he went a little bit farther than that with the Deltans, but yeah, they were very human-like aliens. And this is not a criticism. This was a fun book.
Right. And it was this definitely got into the whole, you know, prime directive, which they even bring up. You know, it's like, it's well, like, you know, should we just, you know, let them get slaughtered by, you know, these apoids or whatever he called them? I forget.
But it's against the prime directive. That was a TV show.
Right. He's like, oh, well, you're right. The other balls might be irritated if we just let them get slaughtered. Like, but who knows? Maybe it'll be okay.
Well, yeah, they did have some interesting discussion about, well, maybe this is the pressure that makes them more intelligent. And if we just become the sky gods and give them everything they want, maybe they won't become as intelligent in the long run, but also maybe they'll be dead. So
right.
They have a bit of a compromise and try to help them out at arm's length.
Right. Except they basically had the robot drones that went around and helped them out. So right. They had their version of the burning bush, I guess.
Exactly. All right. Was there anything else we wanted to talk about?
So how many other books are in the series? I know there's at least one or two. But
at least a couple more. I don't really know. I would be quite happy to snap them all up, but we'll probably just go through them as necessary.
Right.
Because it sure seems fun. And yeah, I know that at least one of them is called All These Worlds from that quote in 2010, which is kind of a deep cut. And so I love it.
Well, they definitely nod towards, oh, not just is there other intelligent life, but there are other intelligent, you know, aliens that are far beyond them technologically, where they find towards the end of the book, that crash site that had the little ants that just, when you scan them, they absorb the energy and start like doing stuff and they're like, oh crap.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it's like their little tiny capacitor loops, right? And they get charged up.
They're mini versions of the Borg.
And actually what's funny is that part of it started made me think of that old book series, like Space 2000 to 2100 AD, which was mostly the 70s book that had a bunch of space artwork, which is actually a pretty famous book if you've heard of it. If you haven't, then I guess it's not.
It's not that famous if I haven't heard of it.
Wow. And now Kevin's Tautology Corner.
Exactly.
And here we are in the Library of Alexandria.
But that book basically was this guy who found a bunch of these cool like space artwork from the late 70s.
Oh.
I put them together into this big glossy kind of coffee table book,
just like Bob did.
Yes, just like Bob did.
Sorry, I just am having a little trouble connecting this to our main narrative.
And so they quickly wrote up sort of a story where they framed that this is like a future history of the Earth, like, you know, space flight, and there were these like galactic wars and things like that. So it kind of reminded me of some of the parts of that book.
In that they are both science fiction.
Can you help me draw a line between what you just said and where we are in this book?
It just reminded me of early human space flight and finding other spacefaring civilizations that started a war with them, basically.
I believe Kevin is remembering some sort of alternate history.
It is. It's future history, just like Star Trek.
Did you find the monolith on the moon?
I didn't personally find it.
You were there?
But I did like in the book how they were joking about leaving a monolith down for the to talk to them.
There was another classic book referenced. I think it's Michael Crichton's Andromeda Strain.
Oh, they did mention that, yeah.
Very, very early in the book when they had just thawed Bob out into the computer and essentially set up some sort of, you know, training lab, but they had put a nuclear bomb down below.
That's true. I hadn't really thought about that. Yeah.
Well, they specifically mentioned, he's like, so this is essentially an Andromeda Strain, right?
Yeah. And the guy's like, huh?
Yeah. The doctor, what was his name? Dr. Landers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, I don't understand the reference.
I don't know. I think that we are Legion, parenthetical, we are Bob, should come up with their own, you know, Moo-like game since...
Is it an RPG yet?
Moo-like game.
Okay, great. You mean Masters of...
Of Orion, yes.
Oh, of Orion.
That's the common acronym.
Okay, great.
Not a massively online...
It could be.
Or the secret cow level of Diablo.
Yes. If you combine those. We're exploring space with cows.
Well, yes. On that note.
We're bovines on the moon.
The cow people.
I believe it's time to arm ourselves with cleavers and knives and set up styrofoam coolers with dry ice and strategic positions so we can all cut each other's heads off and have them land and so that we can be all bobbed together.
This sounds too complex.
It would probably be bad if we didn't have someone else there to freeze the heads then, because then they would find this bizarre crime scene.
Sounds like some aside from that perfect idea.
It sounds like some sort of horrible, like, you know, Rube Goldberg, you know, machine.
And then it just shoots it into space to keep it cold or something.
I'm pretty sure that we would all just duck at the last minute.
I just really want to see you test it first.
All right. Well, until we're all uploaded and used as sentient thermostats in the far future, we are Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
AMI.